Could always just sing the Jeopardy song. All right, welcome back to Shakedown Shan. No intro music today, but that's all right. I know it's been a few weeks. We had a big, big snowstorm last week, but today is a well-anticipated episode. We have a special guest, Eric Hilaire. Am I saying your last name right?
No, but nobody ever does. It's Hilaire. But that's okay. It's been mispronounced my entire life.
Okay. So Eric has a podcast, Rebel with a Cause podcast. And I believe you're from Louisiana, correct?
That is correct. Right outside Baton Rouge.
Awesome. And I've been so excited to get you on this show. So happy to finally be doing it. So why don't you just give me a little background on how you like it down in Louisiana and maybe like what you do.
Okay. Living in Louisiana, I have basically the same relationship that Voltaire had with Paris, where I love the state, love the city, but I don't really like the people here. So, my day job actually is a CAD technician for a civil engineering firm. So I'm one of those boring nerds that draws lines in the computer all day.
It's okay. I'm a nerd, not a line drawing computer nerd, but I'm a nerd.
That's fine. We're all nerds in something.
And so how did you get into your libertarianism?
It kind of started with me with the second term of George W. Bush. I already was kind of leaning that direction before that. And I basically just had a name put to it once I saw Ron Paul get up on stage for the first time. Mm-hmm. And when you start, getting into the Google machine and and all the other search engines, and you're trying to find out more information on this Ron Paul character, then you're like, oh, no, libertarian. That's the word I am. That's what I am.
Right.
And
yeah.
So after that, it's been off to the races.
Yeah, that's kind of like how I got into it, really. Like, I always had these certain ideas, and I never really knew there was, like, a place for those ideas, and, like, nobody really represented them the best. And right. So I couldn't really decide what I was, and I was unidentified for a while. And then I was brought to the light and was given some terms, and I'm like, hey, this makes sense. And I guess that's what I am, really.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of us like that. So we kind of knew it in the back of our minds, and we just didn't really have any kind of label to put on it. And then once we find out, and then we're like, oh, no, that's what it is. That's the light bulb aha moment for most
right,
of us.
Yeah, definitely had a light bulb moment. And so how did you get started into doing your podcast?
Stubborn determination. I just decided one day to start it. And when I initially started, it was just through my phone using the headphone microphone that came with the phone.
Oh.
Yeah. So I just said, you know what? I'm just going to record it, throw it up there. If anybody listens, great. If nobody listens, fine. I'll just keep recording anyways. So that's basically how it started.
Oh, that's awesome. And now you have, like, what, 50 episodes or something like that, or close to 50?
Yeah, this past week, I got hit with the stupid stick, and I decided to release an episode every day this week. And I'm never doing that again, by the way. So now I'm up to 55 episodes. And I got yours today, and then I got another podcast that I'm going to be a guest on tomorrow. So.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. I know you put out a thing out there about you had goals to get certain people on your show this year. Who were they again?
Well, I got Pete Raymond, who most people knew as Mance Raider. I had him on. Daniel Elwood was on last year from the Actual Anarchy podcast. They do movie reviews and stuff. And so this year, I wanted to talk to you. So ipso facto, I guess we're doing it now. And at some point, I guess I can sucker Scott Horton to being on. But I don't know how well that's going to go.
Yeah, I saw that in the post and I was like, oh, that would be really interesting. He's always on Dave Smith. Yeah. You listen to Dave Smith?
Yeah, pretty much any kind of podcast out there I listen to. I think my little podcast app has got about 20 or 30 podcasts in there that I listen to.
That's awesome. I was listening to your podcast the other day, and I have to say, I already told you, but now I'm going to tell everybody else that listens that I really like your intro music. So everyone should listen to it. The intro music is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's Black Label Society. Berserkers. YouTube doesn't like that I use it, but, you know, whatever.
You get content flagged or copyright flag or something.
Yeah, they count it as a copyright flag, but since it's not more than 30 seconds, they just demonetize the video, which I'm not making any money off of YouTube anyway, so that's fine.
Right. Yeah, so that's awesome. We have some good topics today. One of them is about the Yellow Vest movement in France.
Okay.
It's caught a lot of people's attention, especially libertarians, because you know how we are, just people protesting the government, especially in mass numbers. We're like, woo! But I mean, there's a lot more to it than just that.
Right.
And so I did a little bit of digging, and I wanted to get your take on it and what, like, you know so far about it. Then we'll discuss it a little, probably.
Okay. Yeah, not a problem. From what I understand, this started over a gasoline tax.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the people of France, they're kind of an interesting bunch. So they vote in a socialist leader, Macron.
Yes.
And when he starts giving them all the socialism that they asked for, then they decide it's too much socialism. So they started protesting against it.
Right.
And when you go start looking at their list of demands of stuff, it's just kind of a mishmash of different things. But all of it's still kind of, you know, the state should be in charge of this. And, you know, wages should go up, as if the government has any control over who gets paid what, right?
Right.
So I think their heart is in the right place. They know that the government's not doing a good thing with this gasoline tax increase. But they haven't really got that aha moment that we got. And they don't understand that it's the government is the problem. It's not really, you know, private companies trying to screw them out of a dollar bill or whatever, or I guess a euro in their case.
Right. I have a list of their demands here, actually. And it's something, where did I get this from? ThinkLiberty.com. They're like, it's something you'd expect to see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez would say if she were radicalized, took hostage, and offered the state her list of demands. And so they list them off here: higher minimum wage, nationalization of heating and electricity companies, which is outrageously insane to think about. I believe it was Venezuela nationalized their oil, and that's what caused a lot of the problems down there. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's what happened. Where was I? More progressive income taxes, the end of austerity, which that's very vague. More taxes for the wealthy, the end of outsourcing work for French corporations, a government job guarantee, abolition of the Senate, an end to privatization of the French infrastructure, closure of private schools, trains and post offices. That doesn't make sense. Maximum public classroom sizes and temporary foreign worker programs, and return unsuccessful asylum seekers to their country of origin. So it did start with the gas tax, and that's where everyone on the libertarian train that was catching wind of it was like freaking out, like, this is good. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like the memes and I like to use them to my benefit, but there's a lot more to the story than what's on the surface. And it just seems like everybody in France that has some kind of like bone to pick has gotten together, and it's just, there's no organized, like, one kind of central idea that they want to accomplish, which frustrates me. Yeah, so let's see. What else did they want? So I don't know. I have to really say that the violence and the measures that the police are using against them, though, I don't agree with. It shows that they're in a police state, really, because they're backing up the president of France rather than the people of France, when it should be the police work for you, the people, because you pay for them via taxes. And we see that a lot in Venezuela, too. The military always backs up the president there as well. There's been a lot of news about Venezuela lately. Are you still there? Oh no, I think we lost him.
Doo-doo-doo. No, it should be on. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, there's been a lot of news about Venezuela.
Yeah, no, let... Oh, now I'm getting an echo.
Oh, no. So... Okay. I wanted to hear your take on Venezuela.
Yeah, Venezuela has been pretty interesting. It was the last couple of days, a lot has happened, including a military coup. There was some members of the Venezuelan National Guard that decided that they were going to try and install a new president.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the military decided to start backing up Maduro.
Yep.
And now the President Trump has only recognized Juan Guaido, I think that's how you pronounce his last name,
mm-hmm.
As the legitimate president of Venezuela. So there's already been a couple of people killed. I think one news story I had put the total at 7, just with military clashing with people supporting the Guaido. And then and all this is kind of interesting because Michael Malice puts it, you know, if we ever see some kind of revolution in North Korea, it's going to be very slow and then all of a sudden. And I think that's kind of what's happening in Venezuela right now. It was very kind of slow going. We went through the Hugo Chavez years, gone through the Maduro years, and then now all of a sudden there's this new guy there.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, I think everybody should really just stay out of it. I don't want another Syria on our hands where we're trying to pick a side on who's going to win a civil war in another country.
Oh, yeah, you know? Definitely. I don't want to get involved there. I mean, they were looking to try to get involved down there, but there's no like necessity to protect our security or something like that they said. So they can't justify going there, which is good because we don't need to be in another country. But it's crazy what's been going on there. I mean, their whole economy is just falling apart. They have like the worst inflation rate. It's the capital of Venezuela is the highest murder rate. Their infant mortality is like, I think it said, higher than Syria's. Their necessities are considered luxuries, like just toilet paper and toothpaste and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and that's what happens when you embrace state control of everything, when the state controls the prices and the companies, and I mean everything just goes back into their pockets. And I really wish that we could use that as a wake-up call for here when we got loonies in the Congress trying to get more state control of things. Like it doesn't work out in other countries. I don't see why it's going to work here.
Well, that's always the trick. Socialism has never worked anywhere it's been tried, and it always descends in some kind of military dictatorship at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you know, the U.S. isn't completely innocent in the whole thing because they've done some economic sanctions and everything else against it. So, yeah, with AOC and Elizabeth Warren and some of the other Congress critters and Senate critters and everything, they all like to advocate for what they call democratic socialism. Well, Venezuela is a great example because Maduro was voted in. You know, Hugo Chavez was voted in.
Right.
So you can't say that these things, you know, are done in a vacuum. And of course, their response to that always is, well, it's not real socialism, you know, except right. that it is, you know.
And I mean, you can say it's not real socialism, but then we got these people advocating for democratic socialism, which you can also say is not real socialism. So they're really not helping right. their point at all. We were actually just watching some Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez videos before we came in and laughing. We were getting pumped up for the show.
Yeah.
Getting angry. She makes these outlandish, totally incorrect facts or not facts, statements that she tries to put out there as facts.
Yeah, but she's morally correct.
Right.
Remember?
She's morally correct. And she just is just insane. And it, I mean, it really plays to people's emotions. She does well with that. But she just, when even like confronted by saying, listen, you're not getting facts out, she's like, well, the facts don't matter. And what matters is that people need money to live. Okay. Well, you're not going to help that any. But it's just crazy what she says on Twitter and stuff like that. She never really says anything of substance, really. She just throws out plays, like I said, on emotions. And she's basically like Trump on Twitter, like, but the opposite. So my boss actually said, he goes, you know, Republicans got Trump, who they need, on Twitter saying what they have, what they want out there. And so now we got the liberals. They've got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Twitter, and it's all just a big Twitter fight now. It's crazy that it's coming.
One good thing I can say about Alexandra is she at least spell checks before hitting tweet.
It's okay. I forget to spell check sometimes. But so how do you think that we can get this message across to society by relating it to Venezuela?
Well, that
was a terribly asked question.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, when I talk to my friends and family about the things that are going on in Venezuela, I do try to remind them. I was like, well, basically in the United States, we're doing this exact same thing. And, you know, I'll start pointing to quotes from, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and even some Republicans in there about some socialist program, but they're not. They're not thinking it in the vein of, is this socialist or not? They're just thinking, well, this is good. This would be good for America. And so when you try to draw that distinction between the two, then I think you can kind of sort of get them on board. But I like to engage what's called circle talk, where I'll start with a point. I'll make a couple of few other points, but I'll go back to that original point. And the goal of that is trying to, you know, repetition is the key to memorization, right?
Right.
So hopefully at some point, you know, they're going to get my original point and maybe actually say it out loud. Now, once a person says it out loud, then it'll stick.
So. Right. I see that a lot. I know somebody that always tries to explain the taxation is theft thing by saying like, okay, so you have to pay taxes. And if you don't pay them, what happens? And if you still refuse to pay them, then what happens? They put you in a cage by the force of gun, right? So that's theft. They're stealing your money with force. And so what is theft? In essence, taxation is theft. And it's just this whole circle, and he'll go through it again and again and hopefully try to get the person to say it. And that's the hardest part, is getting them to say it.
Yeah, it's once I can agree on what the terms are beforehand, so I'll say, okay, is it okay for me to take the contents of your wallet or your purse?
Right.
And usually the people will say, well, no. I said, okay, well, what if I'm doing it to build a road or put a book in a library? Mm-hmm. They'll still say, well, no. I was like, okay, so we can both agree that it doesn't really matter what it's used for, that it's taking something that doesn't belong to you.
Right.
And sometimes you do have to reduce it down to kindergartner terms with them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Always start at the basic level and work your way up.
Yeah.
This is Rick. I have to ask you a question. Now, you're in Louisiana, but you don't like the people. You know, we're in New York. We like the people, but we don't like New York. Our governor just passed a law the day before yesterday that all DACA people can get a free college education in New York. Now, I'm sure that's probably SUNY schools, state schools, but right. If I have a child, my daughter went to SUNY school, and I had to pay their tuition. Now, what do you think that families should do who are paying for tuition when these DACA kids are getting free college? What would be your answer to getting to our crazy governor? I think that's a form of socialism.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Anytime that you're saying free education, you always got to put that free thing in quotation marks because it's not actually free. Somebody's paying for it somewhere. So either your tuition rates are going to go up for those that have to pay the tuition. You know, property taxes are also going to go up because our schools down here are paid for through property taxes. Maybe the same thing in New York. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's but the same way.
Yeah, at some point, one of those things are going to go up. And, you know, it may only go up like a few pennies here and there. But, you know, a population center like New York, you know, just a few pennies, that's going to mean a lot down the road. But trying to get someone to understand, it's like, look, well, this is, you know, maybe 4 cents less than what you would have made previously. And, you know, now you're supposedly educating kids. But what kind of education are they going to get? Is it going to be the same garbage that all the other kids are getting? You know, can you really call that education?
Right, especially if it's a state college. And I'm not saying that they're bad, but I'm just saying that any kind of state education has definitely got those indoctrination kind of educations planted in there, and there's certain things that they have to teach and curriculums they have to follow, whereas right. In a like a private college or something like that, it's up to the professor that wants to teach. I mean, even private schools, though, still have some kind of like outline based on whatever degree you're going for, but they have more freedom to play around with what they're actually going to teach.
Right. And then with the private school or a private university, they're subject to the market. So if they're pushing forward a curriculum that their customers, a la their students, don't agree with, then those students will just vote with their dollars. They'll go to a different school that's going to teach them what they right. want to learn.
Yep.
So in this same case, so now we've got kids from a different country that don't know the culture, don't know the language necessarily well, and now you're forcing them into that environment all at once. So now we're going to have to hire more teachers, so more taxes are going to have to go up that are going to be able to be bilingual, and it's going to be a disaster waiting to happen. In economic circles, this is called tragedy of the commons. So if everybody owns something, then nobody owns it, nobody takes care of it.
Right.
So yeah, we're gonna definitely, y'all are gonna, you know, buckle up, get ready, because stuff is about to happen in New York City, especially after passing bills where it's now okay to kill babies as soon as they're born.
Yeah, I did hear about that abortion thing. And I know I've seen a lot of discussion about it, and there is everyone keeps trying to point out that it says if the health or well-being of the mother is at risk, or the infant or whatever, but it's kind of vague. It's like the health. So what does that mean? Doesn't mean, I know life-threatening is one of them, but then the second part of it is the health. Okay.
Right.
So the health of the mother, say it's not life-threatening, say it just would do something to her health. We have the medicine, the technology to deal with things. Same with the infant. I mean, babies are being born now that never would have survived certain things back then that we have the technology for to make them survive. Right. And same with the mother. And these late-term abortions, I don't agree. It's just, I think that it's murder. But I'm, like, torn on whether I can, I don't know. It's such a hard subject to, like, figure out. Because, like, I'm still trying to figure out. I mean, to me, myself, I know how I feel about it, but I don't know. I can't even put it into words, really.
Well, I think abortion is a subject that is different for everybody. I don't think there's one rule, one side or the other. For everybody, it means something different, even if you agree with some things. Now, I'm old enough to remember, I grew up Catholic, but I'm old enough to remember that when abortion wasn't legal, and if you were having a baby in a hospital, that the baby came first. The mother's health wasn't even taken into consideration. It was the baby. You save the baby and let the mother die if it was a case of one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean,
I mean, and I mean, that's, I guess, the risk you take when you have a child, honestly. Mm-hmm. Because the only reason why most people survive is because of the technology that we have, because not everyone is made to survive childbirth. Most people are, but not everybody. And we have so many people that survive because of what we have today. And I really don't think that late term abortions are necessary anytime.
But see, one of the things that, and I don't know if you agree with me, Alex, back then, like I said, you had to choose one or the other. Well, you're still picking a life. Who are you going to let survive, the mother, and then have the baby die, or you bring the baby, you know, to let bring the mm-hmm. baby out, and the mother dies where she could have been saved if they had taken the baby. So it was still a form of abortion, but maybe performed on the mother. So I think that's kind of an issue that is, I mean, I'm pro-life, but that's an issue that's different for everybody, I think.
That's definitely a hard topic to navigate that has a lot of like specific cases where I don't know if you can do anything. And I don't know, just one blanket law isn't going to be able to satisfy all these individual cases. But I mean, personally, I believe abortion is murder. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, you're taking the life of somebody, of a human being. And, so anyway, circling back to what I was saying about how I saw people on Facebook, defending the law with saying that it has those two specific, instances that it's okay. So I was saying that it says the health of the mother. So what does that mean? Mental health? Can people try to argue that? Like, oh, so postpartum depression, like if you've already had a child and you know you're going to have that or whatever, like, is that an instance? It's like, it seems to me to be extremely vague, and that people are going to be able to manipulate it very easily. And I'm not satisfied with that. It's, I don't know how you feel about that either.
Well, anytime that there's vague language in any kind of law, the two words that instantly spring to mind is slippery slope. Because it may not be a doctor or some lawyer in charge right now that would view a mother getting the flu afterwards as being part of the health, you know.
Right.
Or, yeah, but later on, it may just be, oh, well, we know that she's going to have postpartum depression. She's already showing signs of it right now. Let's, you know, go ahead and terminate this pregnancy right now. But you can't say that. Nobody's got a crystal ball.
Right. And it's just, yeah, it's not right. And I mean, how do you define that health? Life-threatening is something that I have a hard time dealing with. As far as late term, I don't agree with it. But as far as early on, life-threatening is something that I may let slide in very specific instances. But as far as late term, I still don't agree with that, because we can, we definitely have technology to combat that. Selective.
Yeah. I gave Shannon a note, selective birth. I mean, if the baby comes out and there's going to be something wrong with the baby, do you automatically terminate the life?
Oh, I don't agree with that either, like autism, no, and stuff,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, if your child's gonna have autism, you deal with it.
Exactly.
This whole selective birth thing is absurd. That's going back to like the times of the Egyptians used to throw babies of, not maybe not the Egyptians, but I can't remember who it was, used to throw female babies off of cliffs. Because they wanted
any of the ancient cultures. Roman. I mean, if the baby came out just a little bit too small, sometimes it was just, you know, they just chunked it with a rock, you know.
Right.
But
right.
And that was more out of, well, we're trying to survive here, and we can't have a weakling around. And so that's how they justified in their own mind to commit infanticide.
Right.
And the Spartans were actually more famous for doing that. Any kind of, you know, weakly baby, or if it was malformed or whatever. Yeah, it just got cast off of a cliff.
Right.
So,
and I mean, yeah,
I definitely don't want to go back to those days. That was pure barbarism.
Right. And so I think this law that Cuomo just passed is absolutely ridiculous. And just seeing all the arguments for it makes me just want to rip my hair out and just yell to everybody that abortion is murder, but I don't want to get banned from the internet. So, that's what we're dealing with up here in New York right now.
Yeah, they all think of terms of the here and now. They're not thinking, you know, years down the road. What if the entirety of New York becomes a far-right fascist dictatorship, and now just being liberal is now considered, you know, health of the mother or health of the child?
Right.
You know? They don't ever think about that kind of stuff.
The vagueness of it is perplexing, to say the least. And I think Rick had a question. Did you?
Have you ever come across any news or anything in the abortion discussion that many women who have abortions, a large percentage of them end up becoming pro-life because
the effects of it,
the effects of what they've gone through are so traumatic. I mean, they just think that getting rid of the baby is an easy thing to do and they can go on with their life. But I mean, there's a lot more human feeling when you do that than they think. Have you ever run across discussion on that?
Yeah, I've seen a few discussions over the psychological after effects of it. And I think the last time I saw something, I'd have to double check. It's a vast minority of those who were glad that they did it, and they carry on with their lives like nothing happened. But I seem to remember a large number of them, you know, come back and they say, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe I should have gave it up for adoption. It was more out of inconvenience over anything else. I'd have to check, like, see if there was actually any kind of studies done on that. But I want to think I remember reading it somewhere. It was like maybe 10 or 12 years ago. So I don't even know if those numbers even still apply.
Right. It's just, I think playing around with lives is such a hefty decision that you carry around. And I mean, once you say you shouldn't have done it, I mean, it's too late to go back. It's not anything that you can change. And so it shouldn't be a matter that's taken so lightly. In politics and stuff like that. And coming from the libertarian point of view, it's extremely challenging because you see a lot of people, oh, the right to choose and blah, blah, blah. And you should have the freedom to do what you want with your body, but it's not really your body. And I know that there's this, I've seen a divide with libertarians on this issue of the right to choose, and then people saying, well, it's not your body, it's not your property. Yes, it's inside of your body and your property, but it still doesn't make it yours. And so people, there's a whole argument out there trying to figure out when it's considered its own and when it's still considered yours. And it's just, it's not an easy thing to wrap your head around. And there's so many gray areas. It's just, I don't think any type of law, even a very specific law, would be able to combat the issue at hand.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's a tough decision that somebody and the partner are going to have to come to agreement on. Where I draw the line is, I don't want to pay for your abortion.
Oh yeah, definitely. Know? I don't want to be paying for something I don't agree with.
That's all going to be on you. I will definitely disagree with your actions.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I don't want me to pay for it because I disagree with it.
Yeah.
And I think even if we do get to Ancapistan, Libertopia, or whatever, I really don't think that there's going to be that many abortions happening in the first place.
No.
I think people will kind of look and see, it's like, okay, well, we've got this baby that is on the way that nobody planned for. We're not in a place in our life where we can handle it. I think all the information would be available. I think all the informed consent is going to happen, and they'll say, okay, well, there's this adoption agency over here. You know, we got a family over in Houston, Texas, that's willing to take it.
Right. Yeah. There's so many options.
And this actually strikes me to the core. I'm a foster parent and adoptive parent myself. I can't have any of my own kids. I'll gladly take yours if you don't want them,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause I've already got two kids that, you know, were abused, you know, born, addicted to substances and everything. So yeah, it's a tough thing, but it shouldn't be forced to be paid for by other people.
Oh no, definitely. Definitely not. Definitely not. So I mean, another big topic that's been going on that I talked about my last show, is the shutdown. And so my last show was the tea on the shutdown. And so the biggest news about the shutdown is that we're ending the shutdown temporarily.
Yeah, temporarily.
For 3 weeks.
Dang it.
So I was wondering how you felt about that.
Yeah, everyone was using the term government shutdown, but they were missing the point of the partial government shutdown.
Yes,
it was like 8%
exactly
of the entire
today.
Federal government was put on hiatus. It wasn't, a total shutdown.
Right.
And then we were immediately given all of the sob stories. Oh, well, these people are missing paychecks. And I was like, they're TSA officers. I don't care. Let them go and get another job somewhere. But
I think
now it's coming back temporarily. And, I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't want the stupid wall. People in Texas that their land is going to get stolen from them to build this stupid wall. And again, years down the line, it may be another president who's going to say, oh no, you can't leave. We built a wall so that you can't. they're thinking here and now, they're not thinking later on.
Right. So in Trump's, speech about reopening, however you want to call it, the government for a few weeks, he addresses the paychecks and says, we're going to get your back pay immediately. And that's exactly what I said last show. I'm like, these people aren't getting paid, but guess what? They will get paid. They're going to get back pay. Yeah, it's late. Maybe some bills went unpaid. But I don't really feel bad for them that much because you took a government job. What happens if the government's just gone the next day and you're out a job? I know they're supposed to be guaranteed and your pay is guaranteed because you have a government job, but the government is not invincible and like going to, it could definitely just be gone. I mean, we've seen revolutions, we've overthrown governments. Not that any of that is like happening right now, but it could happen down the road. And so I think the best lesson of this is to not trust government jobs. And to realize that we don't need government to do so many things for us. One of the best things that I saw from it is the national parks being cleaned up by libertarians. And I mean, it was a really good way to try to get our name out there. And I appreciate the effort of all the people that did that. And I just wish it caught on to more people. I know it did go a little viral. But I don't know if that's maybe because I'm looped into the libertarian circle. So I see it. Rick didn't see it. So I wish it caught more attention. But I am a little confident that some people have started to see that, okay, the government is, quote, shut down. Not really, but a few things out there weren't happening and we didn't really need them. So hopefully that is a big lesson of it. But I would like to see how we all survive with it shut down like completely for a few weeks.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Shannon brought up a point about the people, the 800,000 employees that only missed two paychecks. and they were crying about, you know, I don't know how I'm going to buy food. And I mean, if it comes to a person buying dog food or a six pack of beer, they're going to choose a six pack of beer. but the thing is, I am on the board of a financial institution, and anybody that worked for the federal government that had a loan there could come in, and we would just like, and if you knew how many banks, large, you know, banks offered federal employees loans with the security of their paychecks.
Yeah.
At no interest. Now these people are crying because they're missing a paycheck. And a lot of these people went on unemployment, which they had to pay back when they start getting their paychecks. But these people all had the opportunity to get interest-free loans with their paychecks as guarantee.
Yeah.
And they still cry. Now, I don't know how you feel about the media, but I think, and just like the libertarians cleaning the parks, they don't report news anymore. They make news. And
that's correct.
I think the country misses out on a lot of good information and good news. And we're in this period now where everybody's afraid of everything. And I think it was caused by the media. Do you feel that way?
Yeah. Now, the libertarians going in to clean up some local parks, that may have been covered on the local news. It wasn't going to get reported in the national news.
Oh, no. And why would they do that?
As far as the media making up a story, I mean, here in a recent example, we had some teenage boys, you know, because they wore red hats, and there was a picture taken of one of them smiling at a Native American man beating a drum in his face. You know, that got put everywhere. Like, oh, boy, man, these kids. Oh, he's assault smirking that man. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, then once everyone sees the entire video of it, completely refutes anything that they said. And it was actually the boys who were kind of the victims of being yelled at by the black Israelites and the Native American man who just walked up to him, even though he said that, oh, the boys came and surrounded him. You know, and they still doubled down. They said, oh, look, they're all wearing black at this basketball game. Well, yeah, it was a blackout game. All of the kids were wearing black t-shirts. Yeah, some of them put black body paint on.
Right.
And they just kind of doubled down on their ridiculousness. And I think now people are kind of seeing through it a little bit, but I don't know. I don't know.
We still have a ways to go.
It's going
to
be a tough one.
Yeah, it's an uphill battle as far as media. And I mean, hopefully, I mean, I don't want them to keep doing all this ridiculous stuff, but hopefully they keep doing it enough that people are going to get smart enough to be like, all right, we're done with this and let's go find something else to listen to.
As evidence that 1,000 people got laid off in the various media jobs in one day. You know, right. Huffington Post, BuzzFeed, and a couple of others, you know, they all had downsizing. And it's not because, oh, well, we're having a tough time finding advertisers. No, you're having a tough time because you're reporting garbage and people don't want to listen.
Right. I mean, eventually the market's going to get it to the media cycle and hopefully fix it. But I mean, it's hard to do when you've got all these people with the mainstream media and the government's bribing them to push certain stories certain ways. And that cronyism in the mainstream media, it makes it hard for alternative media to really get out there and combat it.
Yeah, I would cry about it, but that just means more listeners for me and you, right?
Right, right, true.
Right. You know, yesterday in the news, they, you know, they arrested that Roger Stone. Now, CNN's camera crew just happened to be there at 5:30 in the morning.
Yep.
And I think it was 15 FBI agents dressed in slack jackets, carrying AK rifles with the grenades, whatever grenades, stun grenades.
And tear bomb?
To arrest a 66-year-old man who has a deaf wife, two dogs, and three cats. And when they could have called his lawyer and he would have turned himself in, and they shackled him when they got to jail, wrists and ankles, and he was only arrested for lying to Congress, which they can prove he didn't. And now if That I was going to mention that when Shannon was mentioning police state. Now, is that, can you believe something like that happens? And a CNN camera crew is across the street when they did this, and it was a surprise arrest.
Right.
Yeah, definitely a surprise arrest. And surprise. CNN just happened to be there.
That's right.
No. Yeah, CNN didn't get a phone call or anything.
No, I mean, it's clear who works for who. And it was that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez video that we were talking about that originally it came out saying Republicans were sharing this and everything. Turns out to be it was just some random person, and who knows, it's not proven, but I can bet, I'm not going to bet because I don't gamble, but if I did, but I can bet that this probably came from the liberals. Because it got her more attention and got her good attention, too. But, I mean, just this whole divide, the media trying to divide us is what keeps us from doing anything. And they're smart. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They just want us to be afraid. They want us to, or what is the quote in The Hunger Games? I know it's very cliche, but President Snow says, I think the only thing stronger than hope is fear. Or no, the only thing stronger than fear is hope. And so, or whatever way it goes, it's been years since I've read that. And so they're trying to get, they're doing all like the fear mongering stuff to keep us apart and angry with each other and this side against this side. And really, we're not seeing that it's the people that are implementing this fear mongering, that's the issue. And divide and conquer.
Yep.
Yeah, it's attained a level of satire when someone is walking down the street with a red hat on and then people are saying, oh my God, it's a racist. And it's like, guys, it's a Nebraska Cornhuskers hat. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I saw a meme that had a red hat and it didn't say Make America Great Again. It said something else on it.
And yeah, it said meme, made you look.
Ha ha, made picture. You look. Yeah. it's just crazy.
But the level of hate that even that regular red hat, Make America Great Again, mm-hmm. the level of hate that just a hat causes today.
Right.
You have to wonder what our society's becoming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1984 is a fiction book. It's not meant to be an instruction manual.
Right. I know. I always reference 1984. Yeah, I love that book. It was, I mean, I don't love the society of the book, but I love that book just because he knew so much, so far ahead of time. He called every single shot. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, He was a socialist himself. So, I mean, that was, you know, that he was just talking with his buddies and just wrote stuff down on paper.
Right.
That's one thing that people kind of miss is like, no, Eric Blair, also known as George Orwell, he was a socialist. And we even saw that with the teenagers from that Catholic high school, because the one kid was charged guilty of face crime, which is also in the book. Oh, he smirked.
Oh, yes.
How dare he?
That was in the book. Yeah, I saw people pulling out excerpts of that part of the book. And, I mean, just like I say, the Thought Police were on Facebook and people get banned for certain things and you can't say certain words. You get flagged for certain words. There's hate speech. There's all this. You can't offend anybody, everything like that. It's crazy.
Yeah. But so, if you're a member of the media and you say, well, that kid has a very punchable face, you know, your Twitter account gets left alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're right.
Right. So yeah, we're since we're talking about books, I was wondering if you had any books to recommend to any listeners that might help portray the message of liberty.
Oh boy. So there is quite a lot. I think one of the best that kind of brings everything to a point is going to be Real Dissent by Tom Woods. That book just kind of gets all the questions that get thrown at us. You know, how dare you not advocate for this perfect society where government is in charge of everything? And he goes through those questions bit by bit and just tears them apart. And so one of the bylines of the book is, you know, straying off of the 3x5 card of allowable opinion. You've got this opinion that is supposed to stay on the little index card. If you go outside of that, why, you're a crazy person. So I think that book does a pretty good job of explaining everything. The Ron Paul Revolution Manifesto book is another good one. And then you can maybe even start to stray a little bit. You can get stuff. I got to find that book. Hold on one second. Yeah, Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, because that'll kind of show you exactly how the U.S. does foreign policy in other countries. So once you kind of get that, get your economic textbooks in order, maybe don't read Man, Economy, and State in one sitting like I did, and then have to flip back through it and reread certain sections over it again. Mm-hmm. Kind of take your time to digest those really thick books. But yeah, off the top of my head, those are a few that I can recommend.
Awesome. I wrote some of those down. So Tom Woods, would you try to get him on your show?
That would be another big one, like Scott Horton. I guess I would just have to, I would have to take the Tom Woods tactic of just emailing him relentlessly until he opened up one email. So maybe.
My goal is just to get Dave Smith as a friend on Facebook, but
I'm one step closer. I've got producer Robbie as one of my friends on Facebook.
Me too. Robbie, I think I'll just add anybody.
All right. Well, you know, there was my dream, and you just shot it out of the sky.
I'm so sorry. Thanks a lot. So sorry. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't know who I am, but
no problem.
But yeah, I admire your goals, and I really wish you luck with them, and I am excited to see how your show grows this year. I'm planning to get a whole bunch of people on, and I would happily come on your show sometime. Definitely.
Oh, no problem. We can definitely set that up.
Yeah. So I think that's all I really have for today. So I'm going to cut it there. Thank you for coming on.
And, oh, no problem at all.
Enjoy anytime. The warmth in Louisiana, because we just got hammered with like 2 feet of snow last week.
Yeah. It's been cold down here. I mean, there was a couple of nights where it got down into the 30s. So
now thirties. Now you're not, are you from Louisiana?
Not originally. I'm from my mother. I just, right. Louisiana's kind of where I am.
Oh, she didn't. Okay. You weren't thrown out or over a cliff then.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Should I say what state are you from? Maybe I should have said that.
I was actually born in Omaha, Nebraska. Nebraska. Hence the Cornhuskers reference, because they stamp on your birth certificate Husker fan for life after that happens. Lived out west in Nevada for a little bit, Texas and Louisiana. I've tried leaving Louisiana several times, but it's kind of like a black hole. If no matter how far away you get, you always come back.
You always come back. Well, you keep that bayou going. That's all.
We'll have to come visit you sometime down there.
Yes, I'm only an hour away from New Orleans. So.
Oh, I would love to see New Orleans.
Yeah. Most people do. And then they see it, and then it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm never coming here again.
Just crushed my dreams. All right. Well, you take care. I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. No problem. You guys have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. And so that is the end of the show, and we will see you next time. Peace out.
Are you sure we're going to see them next time? Or are we just going to hear them?
Well, we don't hear them.
You don't? Why not?
They hear us.
Well, I do have to say that it was great having back on again. And next Saturday should be good. And it's nice to see Joey, too. And I haven't seen him since the holidays, I think. So it's nice having you back.